This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. And today we consider interracial marriage in America and how much things have changed. 40 years ago, on this day, June 12, 1967, the Supreme Court struck down state laws that banned interracial marriage. It was called the Loving Decision, named for Mildred and Richard Loving, a couple who were banned from the state of Virginia for daring to live there as man and wife. But there's another reason that 1967 was a landmark year for interracial romance. 6 months after that Supreme Court ruling, the film Guess Who's Coming to Dinner premiered in theaters. The plot is simple. A young couple wants to get married. She's young and beautiful. He's a doctor, a black doctor. Both sets of parents have a hard time accepting their engagement.
Mrs. Drayton, I'm medically qualified, so I hope you wouldn't think it presumptuous if I say you ought to sit down before you fall down, I mean.
He thinks you're going to faint because he's a Negro.
Well, I don't think I'm going to faint, but I'll sit down anyway.
That was Katharine Hepburn, along with Katherine Houghton and Sidney Poitier. They play the young couple in Love. There was initially some question as to whether Southern movie theaters would play Guess Who's Coming to Dinner if it included an on-screen kiss. And I'll talk about how interracial marriage on-screen has changed. We're joined in the studio by NPR's Bob Mandello. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Michelle.
Now, Bob, I always thought that Hollywood actually liked to shock audiences. What was so different about this film?
Well, there was a code. It was called the Motion Picture Association Production Code of 1934, and it specifically addressed this question. It stated, miscegenation, sex relationships between the white and black races, is forbidden in film. That's what they were up against. They had to sort of break through that wall. They were doing it very carefully this time. They did it with really big stars.
They had some insurance.
Exactly. And they broke through it also because it was a comedy. But the big trick was doing something that was an affirmative picture of a black-white relationship, because prior to that, they'd always been negative in line with this code. If you showed this kind of thing, then you had to have it end sadly.
So you're talking about things like films like Showboat, for instance.
That's right, and also Pinky and Imitation of Life, all kinds of pictures that had played prior to this one, and had been very careful about having it be a story that could end in a very negative way for the couple, thereby affirming what were regarded as all-American values.
How was it actually received?
Well, the audience did not have problems with it. It was shown in the South, too. There were a few theater chains that decided they weren't going to do it initially, but they ended up doing it. And it was very well received, and it won Academy Awards and was a very big deal.
So you mentioned that the studio had some insurance. They had big stars in this case. It sounded like this was an act of courage and also an act of provocation. Did they indeed challenge and do away with that production code?
At that point, you could deal with this issue. It was no longer an issue to deal with this topic. It didn't exactly open the floodgates or anything. You didn't get hundreds of pictures about it, but you did have pictures almost immediately start to deal with that kind of topic in a comic way, at least. Something like Blazing Saddles had Cleavon Little and Madeline Kahn. I mean, during the next few years, things loosened up, but they didn't get real loose. I think Spike Lee, when he approached it in Jungle Fever, for instance, with Wesley Snipes and Annabella Sciorra, he was dealing with a taboo that he told Ebony magazine that year, that the last taboo is still taboo, and so you have to deal with it very carefully.
And dealing with it from both sides, also from the perspective not just of Wesley Snipes, but the woman who plays his wife on screen, Lynetta McKee, and how she and her friends to this.
You don't have to start dating white men.
Stop it, Joe.
I'm not.
No, it's true.
I'm not dating no white
men. It ain't no good black men out there.
Yes, yes, there are.
No,
quiet.
Yes,
there are. Drug addicts in jail.
So, Bob, I know we're talking about a 40-year stretch, but where have we come in terms of how Hollywood deals with interracial romance from 1967 to 2007?
Well, it's gotten better. It's gotten more casual, but it tends to be still pictures about race as opposed to it being treated entirely casually. I think television is better at this than Hollywood is. If Hollywood makes a picture and it's a black and white relationship, then it becomes about that. Whereas in something like My Name is Earl, nobody even thinks about the fact that there's a black-white couple there. It just is, you know. On some level, that's what Hollywood needs to get to, but isn't there yet.
Why does Hollywood still tiptoe on
this? I really think
subject?
It's just a commercial thing that they're really worried that, stars are worried about doing a picture that is going to hurt their popularity. Producers are worried that their mega billion-dollar picture, I mean, it's not really that expensive, but it's close, will have a harder time at the box office. Why introduce this issue unless your picture is basically about that issue? And I think that's what happened.
Sounds like it's still a taboo.
It is sort of a taboo. I'm not convinced it's the last taboo anymore now that Brokeback Mountain came along. And I suppose 40 years from now, we could be talking about whether that had the effect, because there's been no logjam breaking up yet. But I think there are, I think there's no question it is still a taboo.
Thanks, Bob.
Pleasure.
That was NPR's Bob Mondello. And Bob has compiled a list of films and plays that deal with interracial romance. You can find that and watch clips of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner at our website, npr.org.